Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
And this is Best to the Nest, the podcast that is all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. Hi, Marjorie.
Hey, sweetie. We are very excited because today we are welcoming back one of our most frequent guests, Doctor of Chinese Medicine and Functional Medicine Practitioner, Dr. Senya May, to give us a gut check and help us get our gut health in order. This is the buzzword of the day. Absolute buzzword of the day.
Listen, you look at a yogurt container, you're going to see gut health on it. So you better be prepared to know what we're talking about. Okay, we're going to get to Senya in a minute. I'm so excited to have her back with us. But first, we want to say a big thank you to our sponsors of Best to the Nest. First up, Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. This is the skincare regimen we both use. We love it. To say that I'm obsessed would be putting it mildly.
It is affordable luxury skincare from France. Use code NEST for an extra 20% off with 100% money back guarantee. NEST, N-E-S-T. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com.
And a thank you to our brand new sponsor, Visit Duluth. Can you believe it? The first TV market I ever worked in coming back to support this project. I just couldn't be more happy. It's wonderful. You know, summer was made for trips up Minnesota's North Shore. So as we're in the spring, start planning your trip. What will your memories be made of? Hopefully a cool dip in Lake Superior. Find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging. Just go to visitduluth.com. And now we welcome our guest, I think, who has the award for most frequently featured on Best to the Nest.
I see
her regularly. This is Dr. Senya May from Healing Insight in St. Paul. She is a doctor of Chinese medicine, as we mentioned, also a functional medicine practitioner. I utilize both of these services regularly. Senya, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me back on. I just love chatting with you gals.
I love that you're here, Senya. We have been talking a lot, you and I, about gut health. I think this is something that I've talked about on the podcast, that I've done some testing with you, some tweaking of things. And I also, side note, Marjorie, just wrapped up my 5 weeks of 2 times a week cosmetic acupuncture.
Okay.
Which just brings me so much joy. Senya, we might have to sneak in a question or two about that because I know people are going to wonder. And it is the best thing that I do for both my skin and then also my mental health. But gut health is what we're going to talk about first. So this is the buzzword. When I was joking that you see it on a yogurt container, it's true. Have you seen an Activia commercial lately where they're like, hey, here's a bunch of sugar in some pasteurized milk and a titch of probiotics in there? Everybody's obsessed with gut health. And I think like a lot of companies, like food companies, are sort of trying to co-opt this term so that they're selling you something that might be beneficial to your gut health. But when we talk about that term, I think starting with a definition is important. What does it mean when we say the words gut and health?
Yeah, and I think so many people are talking about it, but that can encompass so many things. I mean, so gut health can mean the obvious, right? You have really good bowel movements. You have a bowel movement every day and it's soft, it's banana shaped, it's not urgent, it's easy to pass. You feel great afterwards. There's no odor like this. Okay. You're never bloated like this. I mean, this is the standard definition of like good gut health, of like what's coming out of you and how's it coming out of you.
Right? So yeah, I'm trying to be mature. And it's just, there's something about you talking about going to the bathroom and having a good bowel movement with your lovely voice.
She has the most sweet poop description I've ever heard in my life.
Absolutely. So I'm trying to be mature, and I swear I can pull it together for this podcast. But thank you. So that's the beginning of gut health, is that what's passing through you is passing through properly.
Yeah. Yes.
Correct?
Yes. And I talk about this all day long because this is such a big part of what I do. And I've been a digestive specialist for 16 years. So this is a completely normal conversation for me. This isn't awkward or weird or.
Right. But for so many people,
But I'm glad
awkward.
To see this. Like, yeah, it is.
It is awkward. I mean, I remember like growing up in the time in the 90s when boys would literally say, girls don't poop. Like it was considered unfeminine. What? It was considered like it was never anything that you could talk about. I think particularly for women, that idea of like if you're having any issue with your digestion is just so absolutely mortifying. I mean, frankly, I think it's a contributor to people not getting colon cancer diagnosed early enough because they are so embarrassed to talk about what is going on with what's coming out of your body. When you have children, it certainly shifts because like suddenly if you have like children and a dog and backyard chickens, like you're just managing so much fecal matter at all times that it shifts. But does that happen, Senia, that people just get kind of horrified when you ask them about this when they're in the room with you?
They do. Yeah, they do. They'll get a little bit embarrassed or not really know the words. So I'm just very good at telling, you know, giving people the right words so that it's, we're talking about stool and bowel movements. We're not talking about poop. And, you know, I'm a little more careful about what words I use because it makes people more comfortable, but it takes them a while. So I just tell them, I'm like, look, I talk about this all day long. This isn't awkward for me.
Back to the focus of like what it is. So we're saying having a really good, solid digestive situation is an indicator of good gut health. But does gut health mean, I mean, is it like the balance of the good bacteria to the bad bacteria is that a fallacy too? That's what I kind of want to know about.
Yeah. So like when we dig deeper into what gut health means, it means that you have a good microbiome. So you have lots of good bacteria that helps to support your immunity, helps with your metabolism, helps with mental health as well. Your mood can be related to that. And then not having too much like an overgrowth of bad bacteria or parasites or things that are in there that shouldn't be in there, because that's going to create more bloating. That's going to create inflammation that can then cascade into all sorts of issues, whether it's joint pain or brain fog or, you know, having a lot of fatigue. Those, like the balance of your microbiome is really important. But then also thinking like, well, how are you breaking down your food? Are you making energy out of the food that you eat? So yeah, it's going through you just fine, but are you actually breaking it down well and absorbing it? Because that's going to be needed to support your thyroid and your immune system to get all the nutrients to every place in your body where you need them. So there's many factors that are key here.
Why is this the hot conversation now, or are we just paying attention, or Elizabeth and I just paying attention now? Because it does seem like it's being a little bit co-opted in products. And also this word inflammation is popping up everywhere. Yeah. As well. But is there something that's changed in the research that we know more now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I feel like in the last 5 years, like in social media, gut health has just become a buzzword. Like everybody's talking about gut health and they got a product and they're a gut health coach and all of this. But really it's because there's been so much research that's been done in the microbiome in the last 10 years. Like it's just exploded. There are thousands, tens of thousands of research studies that are being done on the microbiome. Like even my 80-year-old father-in-law is sending me articles from Science Magazine about what they're learning about the microbiome. So there's just so much research that's being done, and it's showing, oh my gosh, this is linked to everything.
Well,
Which shouldn't be surprising.
Well, when you talk about everything, really like the core of your health is in your gut, which is in your core. Nice. And gut health doesn't just mean having like a 6-pack abs. So what are some of the things, I was talking to you about this the other day at my appointment that I wanted to know about, because I feel like a lot of Americans in particular don't even know that they feel bad, because feeling bad is the status quo. Feeling like tired and sluggish and bloated and being used to like eating food and then feeling like, oh my gosh, that is normal. Just because something is common doesn't mean that it's normal. So what are some of the things that you can list for us, Senia, that are like people come into you and they just think like this is just the way that life is, or this is what aging is like, and this is what happens.
Yeah. Well, and a couple of things you said of feeling like really blah or feeling like tired after you eat, that's not normal. Or having like not like having a bowel movement every 3 days, like that's not normal. Common, but not normal. Or like having like really, you know, loose stool all the time. But there's a couple of signs I see a lot that people really don't know are abnormal. So like bloating, you'd be surprised how many people think that bloating is normal because they're like, oh, well, that's how I know I'm full. After I eat, I'm bloated and I unbutton my pants and then I know I should stop eating. Like, no, that's a sign you're not digesting your food well. That's a sign you don't have enough digestive enzymes or you don't have enough stomach acid to break down food. So you know, that can also be a sign that you're eating so much carbs or sugar that it's feeding the bad bacteria. And now the bad bacteria is feeding on that and then it's excreting gas. So it's making you feel bloated. It's putting air in your belly afterwards. So,
oh my gosh. So you being bloated is bad bacteria tooting. Mm-hmm. Can you tell I have two little boys who talk about this stuff all the time?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. That's very funny.
So how do we make sure that we have good gut health? What would you say are the top three things that we should be thinking about every day?
Yeah. Well, I think like paying attention to getting in tune with what's going on with your bowels is kind of a first step, right? And like, you shouldn't have a lot of strong odor because, you know, that can be bacteria tooting and creating this inflammation in your gut. But like, I think what I always think about is what are you doing for your microbiome today? So we really want to be feeding the good bacteria, but we don't want to be feeding the bad bacteria. So step one, like the things that bad bacteria feed on is sugar and carbs and refined foods, especially. Mm-hmm. And that's so much of what our diet is. And so much of us, like we're eating all these refined carbs. We're not eating whole grains. We're eating potato chips or white bread. We're eating buns. We're eating pizza. That's not feeding your good bacteria at all. That's feeding the bad bacteria in your gut. And we don't want to be doing that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think one of the biggest, I've been on a real like nutrient density food mission over the last particular year. Like I always thought that I mean, I'm conscious about what I eat. I've been conscious about it for a long time, but focusing on just nutrient density and understanding proper preparation of grains, that has been like a huge game changer for me. And I think for my children too, where if you ever notice, if you give your kids just like refined crackers, they're hungry and it's nothing. I mean, it's just like feeding them air. It does nothing for them. Versus if you feed them sourdough bread that has been fermented with something good on top of it, it's like a full nourishing food. That's been really helpful for me because I always kind of feel like any of these foods that we eat can be good. It's just a matter of we've ultra processed everything and shortcutted everything in the way we prepare food. And so we've made stuff that should traditionally be good for you bad.
Yeah. And what you've done in that processing method is you've removed all the fiber. And that's what feeds the good bacteria. So we're putting all this like processed carbs and sugar into our system that feeds the bad bacteria, but we're not eating fiber that the good bacteria feed on. And so that's like, if you're going to make one change, it's eat more fiber, focus on getting fiber. My personal favorite is beans because it's just so fiber rich. Those will like when it gets into your intestines, the good bacteria feed on that. And then it makes more good bacteria.
But I think people shy away from beans because they think it's going to give you gas. I mean, I think that's, so how do you tell people, no, this is what you actually need. And is that a fallacy that beans produce gas?
So beans can produce gas for some people if they don't have the right digestive enzyme, which can come back to like, what's your gut health? So I'm often evaluating that in my patients of, do you have enough of the right types of enzymes? Because that's specifically alpha-galactosidase. Big word, but that's what helps you to break down beans. And that's what's in Beano. So some people just don't have that enzyme. But a lot of times it's because they have so much bad bacteria in their gut that when they start to feed the good bacteria with beans, you get this battle that happens. There's this war between them. And then you end up like with more gas and bloating and maybe strong odor.
Right.
And that can actually be a sign of a microbiome imbalance. So oftentimes when people will eat beans for a period of time, when they work through that, they no longer have the bloating from eating beans.
Oh my gosh. Does the soaking help too? Because that's the other argument. Yes. If you're then you're essentially doing like a pre-digestion of the grains. Because remember, like a bean is a seed. If you plant a bean, it will grow into a bean plant. And anything that is a seed has a protective outer layer to try to prevent something from eating it because it wants to grow. And so you have to break down that outer layer in order to consume it. Once I like started to get that, it completely shifted my view of grains.
And just because I think beans are so important, I know so many people who are vegetarian, and I think beans are important too because they give you some protein as well. And you can correct me on any of this if you want to. But I think so. If you're saying to somebody beans are important, canned beans, or do we have to do the soaking?
Is there honestly? I eat canned beans.
Okay.
I mean, yes, it's best if you can buy dry beans and soak them, but I don't, you know, I buy, you know, I just buy 365 brand organic black beans from Whole Foods, and I literally eat them every day. Like this morning, my breakfast is a bean and egg bowl because none of us are getting enough fiber. And so I'm like, well, let's just start off the day with fiber.
That's great.
So I have a bowl. I put a half a cup of black beans. That's 8 grams of fiber right there. We need 25 grams of fiber. Most of my patients are getting 7 to 12 a day.
Wow.
7 to 12 grams. A third to a half of what they're supposed to be getting. So I'm like, well, let's just start the day with some good fiber.
Right.
Feed your microbiome. So half a cup of black beans, that's 8 grams. I'll put in some shredded coleslaw cabbage because I'm lazy and I don't have to chop anything.
Oh, nice.
And that's a couple more grams. I'll put a couple of eggs on top of that.
Yeah.
And then like half an of an avocado. Avocados have tons of fiber in them.
Oh, I had half of one this morning.
Did you?
Yes.
Guacamole is good for your gut.
Oh, this is good. Yeah. Okay, so because so many of these like, you know, I obsess over all these like health podcasts and these biohackery people because I just am always interested in this stuff. And they are pushing so much protein. They're protein obsessed. They're like, you should be eating a gram of protein for every pound of ideal body weight. So if ideal body weight is 150 pounds, which mine isn't, I mean, mine's higher than that, then I should be eating, you know, 175 grams of protein a day, which feels insane to me and very difficult to do without supplementing with super processed protein powder. So, Senia, my question there, it's twofold. One, what are your thoughts on that protein? And two, should we be focusing more on fiber than obsessing over the protein?
Great question. So what I find, most of my patients are not eating enough protein. Now, 1 gram per pound of body weight, that's too much. That's too much to start with. So, you know, that's not, I'm usually trying to like at least get 65 grams of protein a day, which is like 20 grams per meal.
Yeah.
And that's a reasonable, it's 2 eggs and some chicken sausage. That's, you know,
that's
a few
doable.
Ounces of chicken, like totally doable. Like, but half of my patients aren't getting that. At least half my patients.
Okay. So it is a problem. The low protein thing is a problem.
Going
Really hard. It's really hard for me to get that much protein.
Yes.
I have to really focus. I really have to focus on getting protein.
She has to look at the cow and focus on it and stare at it and then just think.
And you're not alone. Yeah.
So protein, you say 65, but I interrupted you.
Minimum. Okay. Yes, like a minimum of 65 grams a day. And that's hard for at least half my patients, really. That's where I'm starting with most of my patients. Like, please get some protein because they're eating all carbs. Which means they're eating all processed carbs because I told you, nobody's getting enough fiber. So they're not eating fibrous carbs. They're eating potato chips. They're eating bread. They're eating, you know, they're eating sugar. They're not eating like really, you know, fibrous foods.
Okay.
So yeah, so protein is important. Like doing over 100 grams of protein a day, that's a lot. I mean, if you're bodybuilding and needing to build up muscle mass, and there are certain times where I'm having my patients do higher levels of protein, especially if they're trying to lose weight, but that's really high. And the problem with that is protein, like animal protein, feeds certain gut bacteria, but they aren't the ones that are really healing for your intestines. It's the fiber that feeds the best bacteria in your gut and helps your body make something called short chain fatty acids, which is something else that bacteria poop out. And they that the short chain fatty acids help your intestines heal. So fiber is actually healing for your gut.
Wow.
On top of just helping to feed good bacteria. So we need to be focusing, like you can't just focus on protein. You have to be getting protein and fat and fiber together.
But 25 grams of fiber feels like, okay, this is good. Like maybe I need to count my fiber a little bit more than I'm counting my protein. Do you like that tracking? I mean, I don't like to become all obsessive about this stuff, but it is hard to know if you're getting enough, if you're not like consciously thinking about it.
Yeah. And so I usually tell people, I'm like, just track your fiber for 3 days. Piece of paper. Doesn't have to be fancy. Doesn't, you know, you don't need an app for that. The apps are often inaccurate anyways. It's like, just write it down. And like, so you get familiar. This is how I got better at it. Cause I'm like, I have bowel issues. That's why I'm a digestive specialist, because I've had issues with it my whole life. And I'm like, am I getting enough fiber? I was getting 12 grams of fiber a day. That's all I was getting. Until I'm like, wait a second. I've been eating a lot. I've been eating fruits and vegetables. Do I eat as much as I should? I wasn't. So I upped that. So I'm like, okay, 2 servings of fruits and vegetables with every meal, right? So breakfast, I'm having a bowl, this egg and bean bowl and fruit with it. But, you know, but what I found is that's not enough. Fruit and vegetables isn't enough to give you fiber. You need to be eating like fiber powerhouses is what I call them. So that's going to be your avocado, your beans, nuts and seeds, flax seeds and chia seeds are really great for that. So it wasn't until I found, oh, I actually need to be eating 2 servings of these fiber powerhouses a day to get me up to 25. Almost nobody's eating 25.
Oh, this is good. Marjorie, are you pumped about this?
Well, what's exciting about it, and it's something that you said about the way that you eat breakfast. And I think what I've tried to do, just because I've tried to make sure that I'm eating, my problem lately is just that I'm not eating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I'm trying to force myself to make sure that everything I eat is a powerhouse. And so like when I have my first glass of water in the morning, or usually I have it midday, I'll have 3 tablespoons of chia seeds, some honey, some lemon, and some water. And then I know I'm getting a little bit of fiber with the chia seeds. And then, but just, I try and really, I can lean on sugar to power myself, but I don't feel good when I do that. And so I have to be really intentional. And so I think for people who don't like counting, what I've tried to do is to just make sure that I have a routine of it. I don't get excited about food. And so it's very easy for me, once I understand something's good for me, to eat the same thing every day. And I think for people who are trying to get a hold of these things, like I'm going to now adopt that breakfast that you just talked about. I'll have eggs, I'll have some beans, I'll throw some cabbage in it. If I know that that's what I'm going to eat and that'll make me feel good, then I'll actually eat. And so I think that's a way to do it too, because I don't think a lot of people like to count, Elizabeth. I don't think people like you were saying, you don't like to keep track.
Yeah.
But I think, like Senya, when you say, like, this is the meal that I know, if I start this way, I've got a good start to fiber for the day. And I think that's really important for, especially too, for women, if you're really busy, if you want to start the day. And the beginning of the day is hardest for me. It's when I least want to eat.
Really?
And so I think that's a really good thing to sort of say, okay, I mean, I'm going to do this tomorrow morning. I'm going to have an egg and some beans. I have so many beans in my pantry.
Don't we all? They just sit there.
There's so many. Because I know they're good for me. But I think that's a way to do it too, is find the dishes. And it's easy to find things now that are fiber-packed or superpower. And I'm telling you, the chia seed, manuka honey, lemon drink is so good. It's so good.
That's good.
So
I'm going to tell Jay. Jay needs to add that to the chia seeds to it. I do the chia seeds in smoothies, particularly for my kids. And this is purely selfish, because if they don't drink it all, it drives me crazy to let it go to waste, because it's a crap ton of organic fruit that I just spent tons of money on. And so the chia seeds, when they blend up in the blender, they get that kind of gelatinous as they sit. And so the smoothie doesn't separate if you leave it in the fridge. If the smoothie separates, my kids are kind of like, this is gross. And I get it. Like, it kind of gets gross, but there's a longevity factor there with the smoothie to sit.
Actually, that's good to know.
In the fridge, which is a little pro tip. But as I'm thinking about your little bean bowl, Senya, I'm thinking like, you know, because I love food and I obsess over these things, I think like, okay, you could do a Mediterranean version with chickpeas, and then you could do like a bunch of fresh parsley, tomato, cucumber on it, and then a couple eggs and like a sprinkle of feta. That would be a nice little twist on your bean
bowl.
That
would be super good. I would even up that and do pinto beans instead of chickpeas.
Really?
So chickpeas are the lowest. They have the lowest fiber and protein.
No
they
way.
They have the most carbs.
Mm-hmm. That's why we love them so much.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, maybe a little bit less hummus and chickpeas, more pinto beans, more black beans, more lentils.
What about like Great Northern, like those white beans? Those would probably be
those are
higher.
Those are kind of in the middle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Those are in the middle.
Oh, look at you and your bean knowledge.
I know.
Bean nerd.
So when we think about our gut health, if our gut health, if we're healthy and everything's balanced, how do we feel? How are we supposed to feel? I think either you or Elizabeth hit on it earlier. I don't think people really know what it feels like to be healthy. I don't think we know anymore. I think we're so detached from how we're feeding our bodies and our gut and all of those things. I don't know that we know how we're supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a question that can even be answered?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's all the work that I do is helping to move people towards optimal health, right? Feeling the best that you possibly can. We're in such a disease state nation that it's all about like, oh, I feel sick. How do I stop feeling sick?
Right.
But it's like, but that's just a baseline where like lack of illness is not thriving, is not feeling amazing, is not having, you know, it's not feeling your best and being able to do your absolute best.
Right.
So when we feel our best, we have really good energy. We have good energy that lasts throughout the day. We're able to fall asleep at night. When we need to, we sleep through the night. We don't feel heavy or sluggish. Our brain is functioning really well. We can be creative. We can do the work that we want to do. We feel happy. We're in a good mood. Like, I mean, not 100% of the time, but you know, as a baseline, like we're feeling pretty darn good. But when we don't have good gut health, or we don't have good health, any number of things can happen then that then just completely derail that. And a lot of that can start from the gut.
So just not feeling good is one, but diseases and conditions are another thing. So I think that would be helpful because there's probably a lot of people listening to Best to the Nest who have been, you know, I know lots of people who have been diagnosed with Hashimoto's and like all these different things. Are those things that are related to gut health? What are the conditions that immediately set off alarm bells to you that are like, we got to look at gut health?
Oh, absolutely. So yes, thyroid issues, like you said, Hashimoto's, autoimmune conditions of all kinds.
Hashimoto's is
an autoimmune condition of the thyroid where your body's attacking your own thyroid. It's very, very common. It's why so many women are on Synthroid is because their body is attacking their own thyroid. But oftentimes that inflammation that's happening is starting in the gut. Same with other autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis or chronic fatigue. That's often related to inflammation in the gut. But there can be many other things that go along with that too. So, I mean, if you're having like big hormonal issues, that can, you know, that can start in the gut. If you're having trouble losing weight, I'm always thinking about the gut when people are having trouble losing weight. I'm like, there's an imbalance there. This is not just calories in equals calories out. You need to have a healthy microbiome in order to easily lose weight. Can you lose weight even if you don't? Yes, you can. It's easier if you have a healthy gut. But
this is
an immune issue. I mean,
And then mood. You mentioned at the beginning of the podcast about mood, about how your gut health influences your mood. Are they linking gut health to depression now?
Oh, absolutely. There's certain like certain good bacteria you need to have in your gut in order to help support your mood. But I find too, if people will be really depressed if they're eating really inflammatory foods, because depression can be an inflammation in the brain. And that is so commonly comes from these terrible foods that we're eating that are creating inflammation. And it's different from different, you know, between different people. So I've had some patients where they come in, they have depression or anxiety, their gut microbiome is totally off. They have an infection in their gut. We clear that infection, their depression and anxiety goes away.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So what are the inflammatory foods? Like you were saying potato chips what are we talking about highly processed foods? Are those the inflammatory foods? Are there other foods that people should be really aware of?
Yeah. So sugar is super inflammatory.
Okay.
And anything that gets broken down into sugar really easily will also be a problem. So that includes highly processed foods because they get turned into sugar, you know, just like that.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're eating too much red meat, that's highly inflammatory. I don't have a problem with red meat, but if you're eating like too much of it and it's not grass-fed.
What about seed oils? I want to ask about that.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing. And there's kind of like this mainstream argument that's like you're fear-mongering if you tell people not to eat canola oil. But then there's others that say canola oil isn't even a real food and it's highly processed. Just for the record, I avoid it as much as possible, but that's my own personal choice.
Yeah. And I feel like seed oils is a very, probably the most trendy topic right now. I hear lots of people talking about this, and rightly so, because we've always looked at, and this comes back to an omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids. I won't get too complicated, but omega-3s are going to be your fish oils. Everybody knows that, should know that those are anti-inflammatory. So salmon and herring and sardines, those have a lot of good, they're going to reduce inflammation in the body. But then omega-6s would be things like red meat. That's going to create arachidonic acid. That's an inflammatory fat. But when you're eating seed oils, it gets turned into arachidonic acid. So all those sunflower oils and anything that's going to be made with the potato chip, or you have refined canola oil, all of those are pure omega-6 fats.
That's soybean, so they corn, grapeseed. Would grapeseed count as that?
If it's refined.
Yeah.
Yep, if it's refined. But your sunflower oil, what else are chips made of?
Soybean, corn, canola, or rapeseed is what they call it in Canada. Yep.
Any of those vegetable oils, really, the ones that we were raised on in the 80s of like, oh, you should cook in vegetable oil because there's vegetable.
Says vegetable, right.
Yeah. Everything was cooked.
Yeah, there's a vegetable in it, so it's better. It's all super refined. Well, and so it creates inflammation.
You get to a point, that's interesting. I mean, if you're really in tune with your body and how you react to certain things, which I think has happened to me more particularly as I've gotten in my 40s. I mean, I basically have a no restaurant French fry policy because I feel so bad after I eat potatoes fried in seed oils, which is what the restaurants use. And we'll like, there's a burger place by us, well known for their stuffed burgers, the Juicy Lucy's. And we'll go there. And if I get a burger, like just a burger with whatever on it, I feel great. Like I eat the burger. I mean, I even know, you know, I know the bun is refined. It's probably not the best. It's not grass-fed beef. It's not the best thing, but I still feel really good. If I will eat the fries or tots with it, I'm wrecked. I am wrecked for the next day.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's so interesting when you say that you're so in tune with how certain foods are making you feel. And it's sort of, as a culture, I'm surprised that more people don't do that. That more people don't really regulate. As you were saying, Senya, people will come in and say, oh, I just don't feel well. And they haven't felt well for a long time. And that we're just not trained. And I put myself in this category too. We're just not trained to look at our diet as the beginning of our health, as the best way to take care of ourselves. And I often, Elizabeth and I have talked about this before, it makes me really, really worried about children.
To your point of, you know, we're not paying attention to how food makes us feel. We're paying attention to the wrong thing. We're wanting food to make us feel happy and like give us that burst and like, oh, I had some sugar. Oh, I feel so good. Wheat can do the same thing. Like, oh my gosh, I feel so good. And then, but then you like within a half hour, 2 hours, you feel gross again. So then you're reaching for more of that. And there's so much food science. Like I went to engineering school. I was with those chemical engineers. I was doing mechanical. I was doing something different. But a lot of them went into food science of what chemicals do I put into this food to make you want to buy more? Well, the way you make people want to buy more is by making them feel happy or giving them this jolt of serotonin when they eat it. So we're paying attention to our food in the wrong way. But it's also difficult because those foods block our own natural signals. So it's hard to see like, oh, well, how does this make me feel? Well, it made me feel happy. It also made me feel bloated.
Right.
But my first step for patients is let's get you feeling better first. And then you're going to be able to see how is this food affecting you.
Yeah.
Because right now, everything makes you feel terrible because you've wrecked your gut. Okay, let's get your gut back on track. And then for all my patients, like they learn how to intuitively eat. Well, I just felt like I needed more protein today. Or, you know, I know that I could have eaten that. I could have had that cake, but I knew how it was going to make me feel. So I chose not to.
Yeah.
So by naturally getting back to a baseline of good gut health, you can tune in and you can listen to how things make you feel. And then you start to make choices. So for me, I'm like, well, do I want to eat that chocolate cake? I'm like, I'm going to be tired and depressed for 2 days if I do that. So I'm not going to eat it. And there's other times where I'm like, I have raging PMS and I will die if I do not get a piece of cafe latte chocolate cake. That's fine. Then I eat and I feel so much better afterward. Is it worth it? And honestly, I actually don't feel quite as bad the next day. As if I'm just eating it on some, you know, random Thursday.
That intention. I think that intention is so important. Okay, so when you start then, let's talk about like, okay, people come to see you, Senya. And you know, and I've seen you for acupuncture for, what are we going on, 10 years probably, I think, Senia?
Yeah.
We've had a long relationship.
Since right after Bernie was born.
It's a joyful thing. It's very wonderful. I think if you can fit in regular acupuncture into your life, you will be so happy there. But then you go and you go back and you continue your education in the functional medicine realm, which I think is what makes you so unique, because you're both a doctor of Chinese medicine and the functional medicine, which means that when it's just, I think the way that you interpret test results and the idea of like different tools that you have in your toolbox to tweak things. Like, you know, when we looked at my hormone levels, for example, we found that although they were in the normal range, the ratio of my estrogen to progesterone wasn't totally optimal. And so we used two tiny little herbs to just like tweak
and it made, without giving you hormones.
Right. Without giving me hormones, that has made such a big difference. And I, you know, you don't have to HIPAA on this, Senia. I'm happy to talk about it. You can talk about my stuff here always. But but that's what I think is so interesting with you. So what are like, are there tests that you recommend? Because everywhere you go, there's like, you can do a gut health test. I was just telling you, I'm going to use this tiny health one on my son because you don't do pediatrics. So but where do people start with these tests and how do you know that it's worth something? Because some of these tests, it's right. Like you'll do a food sensitivity test and they're like, okay, there's 45 foods that you can't eat. And you're like, well, right. Hell.
Cutting all that out? That's
right.
Impossible.
Right.
So it gets so discouraging. Yeah. And so as far as testing goes, you know, testing isn't the be all end all, but it can be a really important component of that, getting to the root of something, like looking for a hidden cause of something. And so when I work with somebody, I have kind of five pillars of functional medicine that I'm looking at. Gut health is one of them, but hormone health, like you mentioned, is another. Liver and detoxification, your blood sugar, and are you getting enough nutrients? And then energy and immunity. So depending on what you're coming in with, we might be working on two or three or four of those different areas. So we'd be choosing different testing depending on what the most important thing is. But say gut health is the big thing. You're like, oh my gosh, my gut is wrecked. I think it's creating a lot of the joint pain that I have. It's contributing to my thyroid problems. Like, we want to dig into gut health. There's like, I do a very, very comprehensive stool test. That's the best that money can buy. It covers, it's like 13 pages of output on it. We can see how you're breaking down protein and fat. Do you have inflammation? Are you getting fiber to the right parts of your gut? A whole page on your microbiome, list 30 to 40 good bacteria. You know, we're looking at some specific
wow.
ones. Do you have an overgrowth of bad bacteria? Do you have parasites? Do you have worms? Like, I mean, it looks at everything. So like that's a test that I'll run when gut health is a major focus for people.
Why wouldn't a primary care physician why wouldn't that be a standard test that they would do? Is this an insurance issue? Because if your gut is really running so much of your body, why wouldn't every doctor want that information?
Right.
Why
because you can't prescribe drugs just based on the information you're getting from this.
Yeah.
And that's the flippant answer. My husband's a physician, so like, don't worry, I'm not anti-Western medicine. But the focus of a GI doctor or your primary is to remove disease. So some GI doctors will do a stool test, but they're just looking, do you have bacteria in there? Do you have too much bacteria? They are not looking to optimize your health and help you improve your digestion. They want to kill the bad thing. Is there a bad thing in there? Great, let's kill it. But they don't have any tools to boost your stomach acid, boost your digestive enzymes, improve your microbiome. They don't have any tools to do that, or they have minimal tools to do that, and that's not their focus. So they're not going to waste their time and their energy. They are working more with people who are really sick.
And so I think that's the other thing that you said there, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, is time. It takes time.
It takes a lot of time.
Yeah. And it's a nuanced approach. I mean, and it's normal levels versus optimal levels. Because we even looked at that with my hormones, that sure, it's in the normal range.
You were in the normal range.
Yeah.
Any doctor would be like, you're fine.
Right. But normal isn't optimal. And I was also like, the symptoms that I was describing to you, Senia, were I was getting a couple of breakouts before every period, which was not normal for me. I was having dark thoughts the night before I would start my period, which was not normal for me. And then I was also having, then my cycle was shortening significantly. So my cycle was going from like a real classic 28 days down to like 21 days. And so even though those numbers were in normal, it wasn't optimal. And I also was heard by Senya when I was saying, like, you know, a doctor maybe who I didn't have a relationship with or wasn't looking at things from a functional point of view would be like, lady, chill out. You have a pimple once a month. Like, take it easy. You know,
right,
but like,
right. Blow it
you know,
off.
Those are yeah. little things.
Those are signs that something is starting to move in the wrong direction.
Changing.
So let's nip it in the bud when it's a minor issue, not when you have breast cancer because your hormones have been too high for too long. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a key thing that you said, Elizabeth. And Senya, this is why I always love talking to you, is because that idea of being heard can be life-saving. When mm-hmm. someone doesn't hear you, that can lead to really disastrous results. And I think that we, as women particularly, I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. For those women in their 30s and 40s and early 50s, depending on when you're in perimenopause or menopause, those shifts that Elizabeth is talking about are so important because it's signaling, as you've said, that her body is changing. And I think menopause has become sort of it goes through cycles, but again, it's sort of top of mind. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot of chatter about menopause right now. But I know so many women who menopause was horrible for them. Not a little bit life-changing, but horrific for them. And I women should know that you need to find somebody as your body is changing, like Elizabeth did. You need to find somebody that hears you and that's going to listen to those little things because it doesn't have to be horrible. Mm-hmm. And if the symptoms are really bad, you need to have somebody that you feel like is hearing you and is going to help you through that. And I think that's so cool. That's such good modeling, Elizabeth, that you're looking at those smaller things. And like you said, Senya, she was in normal range.
Mm-hmm.
It just would have been like, you're fine. You're fine. Yeah. But optimal is okay to want optimal.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's really exciting.
I mean, the downside of feeling really good is that a little thing really wrecks you. Like, you know, if you like feel bad all the time, you're sort of like, okay, well, just add a pimple to the list where I'm like, this is not normal. I'm like, Senya, what are we going to do about it? So that's kind of the first. Do you feel like that comprehensive test for most people is a really helpful place to start? And then also the dietary changes that you're working with people on?
Yeah. And then food sensitivity testing is a big piece of what I do. And, you know, I was on last year and talked about this, but like the lab that you use is very crucial for food sensitivity testing because everybody's offering it. And there's really only two labs in the country that have repeatable results, where if you like send your blood in three times, you'll get the same results three times.
Yeah.
But that is huge for gut health because if you have a sensitivity, you'll create more inflammation in your gut. But it's also huge for overall body health. If you have thyroid issues, autoimmune conditions, foggy headedness, joint pain, if your body feels heavy all the time, then we're definitely doing food sensitivity testing because your body's reacting to something. Or if you're getting sick a lot, if you're getting sick all the time, there's often some foods that are triggers for that.
We want to thank our sponsors, of course, Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. It is affordable luxury skincare from France. The Climate Smart Rotating System is customized to where you live. That means Pour Moi is giving your skin what it needs to stay hydrated and healthy. I wake up in the morning and my skin feels so soft and glowy and hydrated. I just love it.
I think that's the biggest difference, Marjorie, that I notice with Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. I've been using this skincare line for 3 years. It's unlike anything else. I do not have days where I wake up and my skin is tight or oily because my skin is supported and doing exactly what it needs to do to fit with the environment that it's in. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare is proven for anti-aging results. Pour Moi creams and serums are clean, fragrance, and cruelty-free. And we've got a discount for you. Use the code NEST. You'll get an extra 20% off with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to PourMoiSkincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com. And visit Duluth.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring Best to the Nest. Oh my gosh, how much do I love Duluth. It is just one of my favorite places. Did you all know my first television job was in Duluth, Minnesota? I love visiting. It brings back so many memories. And anytime you can spend time in Duluth or up the North Shore, there's just something magical and majestic about it. When we talk about on Best to the Nest, just figuring out how to take a breather and how to slow down and be intentional. I find that there are fewer places that are more perfect for that than Duluth. And visit Duluth.com is the perfect resource for you to plan your trip. Summer is coming up and summer was made for trips up the North Shore. What will your memories be made of? That's a great question. You can find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging. You can get your whole trip planned at visitduluth.com. Can I ask you about probiotics too, Senya? Because that is another thing that I think has been sort of sold to us as like, just take a probiotic and it'll be better. And I can see benefits of probiotics. And then I also know all the differences in all of the probiotics. And is it more complicated, I guess, than just taking a probiotic and calling it good? Now my gut health is set.
Yes. I mean, it's definitely more complicated than that. But again, like with probiotics, like you can take a good full spectrum probiotic, say something has at least like 10 different strains, and that could be kind of a good insurance policy for your health, for your gut health. But you might need, there's some specific strains that we'd be looking at for different conditions. You're doing something different for IBS versus for weight loss versus for, you know, mood issues. But you can also get good probiotics from food. You don't necessarily have to be taking a supplement. So you can get that for fermented foods. Fermented foods are like just full of probiotics, and they're going to have way, way, way more strains than anything that you're going to get in a pill.
However, that's helpful.
I have one caution about fermented foods though. And that is if you have yeast overgrowth, or you've been subjected to mold and you have mold in your body, then probiotics like or fermented foods will make you feel worse. And then you should be taking probiotic pills. So like I probably take a third of my patients off of fermented foods because they have yeast overgrowth. So when they've fermented the kimchi or the sauerkraut or the kombucha, they've fermented like all the good bacteria that's on those things, which is great. That's what you're looking for. But they've also fermented the yeast that's in the air. And so if you have yeast overgrowth, now you're drinking fermented or eating fermented yeast, that's going to make you feel worse. Mm-hmm. So if you feel worse after eating fermented foods, then you've got a different imbalance that we got to be addressing.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And how do we find the good supplements? How do you find a reputable probiotic? Is it, if it's being sold on the counter at a major big box store, do we know that that's somehow good? Is that the criteria? Or how do you know? There's so many.
I know there's so many because it's just, you know, there's been so much research. So there's been a lot of marketing. So there's been a big boom in it. If you're going to spend your money on a good supplement, probiotics is one that you want to be getting a good quality one because it's live bacteria. So if you buy something cheap that's been sitting, that was transported in a hot truck and sat in the warehouse, in a hot warehouse, and then sat on the shelves for months, all the good bacteria has died. So you're really just swallowing a sugar pill. So you want to get one. I'm still a fan of refrigerated probiotics.
Interesting.
You know, people are like, oh, there's all these shelf-stable techniques. I'm like, I haven't actually read the research on it, so I'm not sold. So I use refrigerated probiotics because I know that they're not going to have, you know, all the bacteria isn't going to have died off.
Right.
So I've done a lot of research. So there's a couple of key brands that I carry in my clinic because I just don't trust, you know, just anything off of the shelf at Walgreens because you just don't know what it's been through.
Right.
That being said, you know, I also have people who've bought, you know, they bought different brands and they were like, oh, I feel better when I take this specific probiotic. So I'm not totally poo-pooing it, but if you're really like, if you're focused on it, then that is something I'd be spending money on.
So do people, if they get, okay, so say the fermented foods, can you tell I'm like, I'm all on the like nutrient density of foods thing. This is what I'm trying to do. And even with my supplements, almost like basically everything I take now is totally food-based. So I'm trying to just avoid the synthetics and I'm trying to just make it like food, you know, like if I'm taking, for example, if I feel like a cold coming on, I'll take zinc and it's desiccated oysters that I take. That's, I'm not taking like a synthetic zinc. So those are some just like little tweaks that I've been making. So if people, the fermented foods are bothering them, because I know you always work towards, we want to be sensitive to as few foods as possible. So if the fermented foods are bothering them and you get the yeast and the mold under control, then do people often find the fermented foods are beneficial on the other side? Does that happen?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
So we heal your gut and then like the normal things that should make you feel better will then make you feel better. Just like when people have like bacterial overgrowth in their gut, they don't feel good if they eat a lot of fiber because the bad bacteria will feed on it. And then, you know, they end up getting super bloated or having lots of bowel issues. But once we resolve that, okay, now they can eat all the good fiber.
Okay. So a good sign is if you are making, if you do a few days and you make these dietary changes that Xenia is talking about. So we're cutting out ultra processed foods. We're cutting out sugar. We're cutting out, even cutting out those seed oils, cutting out the refined grains, incorporating 25 grams of fiber in a day and trying to get 65 or around at least grams of protein a day. If you don't feel better in a certain amount of time, do you feel like that's a real sign? Okay, now we need to start digging in.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Okay. Or if you're eating those things, you're like, I feel terrible when I eat this. It's like, those are, you should be feeling great when you eat that. So something's going wrong in the processing. You're not digesting it well, or it's feeding something that it shouldn't. And we gotta address that.
See, that's helpful.
I love that.
Because I feel like people don't know when to go. Like, when do I need to know that, how, if I just eat better, is that going to change things? And sometimes it does. And then sometimes it doesn't.
I love that. I love that summary in just trying something for a couple of days and seeing how that's working. Because it goes back to, again, Xenia, what you were saying is we are seeking the wrong things from our food. And so we need to know how it's supposed to make us feel consistently. And so I love that idea of just, if nothing else, just try it for a couple of days and see if you feel different, see if you feel better. And then know that, and if people, because a lot of people don't live in Minnesota, if people don't have a Xenia, are these tests that you could just insist that your primary care physician do, or will that not do any good? Because they may get all the data, but they may not dig in.
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And their primary physicians and even GI doctors don't order stool tests like this.
Okay.
So you do have to get it from a functional medicine practitioner or a naturopath.
Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know, because there's no point in even insisting on a doctor ordering it if he's not going or she's not going to take the time to go through all the data. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, that's why, what we've talked about too in past episodes with Xenia, I think is so important. Remember, we did the episode where we talked about assembling your healthcare team. And yep. I realized that that is, can feel inconvenient and expensive. And frankly, that's just the truth of the way that our system is set up. But knowing which ER you need to go to if you break an ankle, for example, I have maybe recommendations on ones to go to and ones to not go to based on my personal experience. But, knowing where to go in that situation is just as important as knowing where to go for your kind of chronic health management. I mean, they're just two different things. Like Western medicine is set up to heal you, to fix trauma, which is very important. And it's also set up to help you just get through acute issues. If someone is suicidal or, they can't get out of bed to even function because of depression, that is when like antidepressants can be life-saving and so helpful. But removing the symptom doesn't mean that you're getting to the root cause of what the illness is. And so the treatments have to go hand in hand. You've got like the acute, immediate, and then you have the long term. When I started looking at things like that, Xenia, I was able to really appreciate both ends of the spectrum without always thinking like, well, the whole system sucks. Once I separated it, that one system cannot be all things to all people. If I break my ankle, like I'm not going to go to Xenia and say, can you fix this for me? Because she's not going to, right?
Right.
But there are things
that I... Go see my husband in the ER.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. We expect, just like we expect a probiotic to fix everything, we expect the one system to be right for every single thing. And that's impossible.
Well, I think this is, we always sort of, I at least always come to the same conclusion after I talk to you, Xenia, is that what we should be looking at is not our chronic healthcare issues, although many people have them, but what is our optimal healthcare? How can we feel as good as we're supposed to be feeling? And I think it can be such an empowering thought if we shift our healthcare paradigm. And so when you talk about having your healthcare team, you know, it is expensive. Those things are expensive, but there is information to be found. And like I was saying to you, Senya, like for me, knowing I'm going to change my breakfast, I'm changing my breakfast. Tomorrow I will have a different breakfast. How will I feel? Will I have more sustained energy through the day? That's the beginning of trying to look at like, how can I feel better every day? And it's a small step. But I think that shift that you always remind me of is that we deserve to feel well. Like that should be our baseline, is to feel well every day and to have that be a consistent feeling. And I love that. You always inspire me. Every time I talk to you, you always inspire me. I'm so grateful for that.
I love that. That's amazing.
That's so great. True. I wrote down lack of illness is not thriving. I wrote that down with an actual pen and a piece of paper while you were after you said that, Senya, because I thought it was so life-changing. I know you want to offer something which is really generous to nesters too, which I'm very happy about, but what are some of the transformations that you've seen in people? And I know these transformations are happening because when I was in your office the other day, a woman who I didn't even catch her name and I wouldn't share it anyway, but she said, I found out about Senya because of you and it saved my life. It like coming here has saved my life. Mm-hmm. So I know that this was unprompted, Marjorie. I was just sitting in the waiting room waiting for my appointment, you know, and this is the kind of stuff that you're seeing. So can you give us a couple examples of people who have gotten their gut health from wrecked to, you know, ideal, and then what their life change is like?
Yeah. So, you know, I had a patient who came in and she had IBS where she's like, I don't know, I'm having urgent bowel movements and kind of some looser stool, but she was super exhausted all the time and really cranky as a result of it. And she owns a farm for grass-fed cattle. She's like, I need to be really active. And so we did testing on her and we found out that she had a bacterial infection in her gut, a yeast overgrowth, and she had a viral infection that was creating the fatigue.
Wow.
And so, I mean, like these are not things her doctor was going to be addressing. And we worked together. We changed her diet. We did, you know, we did some testing, but we did some herbal medicine. We did some acupuncture and she's doing absolutely fantastic now. And she's like, oh my gosh, last week I had some normal bowel movements 5 days in a row. She's like, I haven't had that in 20 years.
Oh,
it had been forever since she had that. Yeah. I had another patient who came in to see me and she's like, she sent me a picture after her first appointment. She says, I get bloated. I'm like, okay, well, bloating's not good. We want to address that. I didn't realize how bad it was. She sent me a picture. Her upper stomach was bloated. Like she was not 6 months pregnant, like almost 9 months pregnant. It was huge. Oh. I'm like, oh, honey, you are not digesting your food well. We did a stool test. She had poor digestion, but she also had a low-grade bacterial overgrowth from all the strep infections she had had as a kid. So she had three strains of strep that were just hanging on that even a lot of other functional medicine practitioners were like, that's normal. I'm like, no, not normal. Nope. We need to get rid of some of that. And now she saw me and she's like, she had been wanting to lose weight, but she couldn't eat properly because everything made her bloated. Mm-hmm. Well, now she lost like 15 pounds and she's finally able to drop the weight because her digestion is back to normal and she can listen to what her body is telling her about what she needs and what she doesn't. So I love doing metabolic work with people. And like I call it, I have a metabolic repair program of like, okay, let's fix some of the underlying causes because you can naturally lose weight, but just by decreasing all the inflammation in your system by stopping adding so many inflammatory foods. And that's where food sensitivity testing is helpful. Like, okay, well, what foods are creating inflammation for you? Specifically for you, not for everybody. Yes, wheat is inflammatory, sugar is inflammatory, dairy can be. But what's creating it for you? Because maybe you can't eat dairy, but you can actually eat some cheese. Well, guess what? That shows up in the testing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's amazing. Parse that out.
That's amazing.
Oh, Senya, you're so good. This is so helpful. We kept you over the time, 15 minutes, and we're sorry, not sorry. What do you want us to do? Not ask the
We've
questions.
Done this- every time. Every time we go
over. Senia knows. I can talk to you guys all day.
She's like, when I tell her what time we're going to be done, she's like, yeah, right. Well, a lot more time. Whatever. We can't help it. Okay, before we go, Senia, I see you wrote a little note in here that you've got a little, an offer for Nestors if you've been motivated and you want to go and see Senia. And we just want to make her accessible. And I also want to maintain that I am able to get appointments when I need them. Love you.
That's why I had you pre-book when you were in. I'm like, ooh, if I'm going to come on your podcast, I usually get a lot of calls. So let's get you on the calendar. Yeah. So I love working with Nestors. Your listeners are so inspiring and they want to optimize their health. And I see that more so than in the general population. They're like, you know what? This is more than just me not suffering through my life. Like, I want to be the best that I can possibly be. And so honestly, like, Nestors are my favorite people. So I would love for more of you to come to see me.
Yay.
Lots of you already do. And so for anybody, any new patients who come in to see me and do one of my 4 or 6 month programs or any of my new packages, really, I'll throw in a stool test or whatever the first test is that you need. So
and
like,
she'll also give
it.
You like free sexy talk about your bowel movements, just like she did at the beginning. It'll be really calming in how she talks about it.
Actually, that's wonderful. That is really wonderful. And our bodies are telling us lots of things and we just need to have somebody like you to listen. So it's that's so just great.
Can
that's
you do
great.
This stuff remotely, Senia? Are you doing that or do you want people to come into the office?
You know, I can do some of it remotely. I only work with people in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Just from telemedicine laws. But I think there's something really healing about being in the room with somebody and listening and being present. I think that that is half of the therapeutic relationship. That's also why I spend so much time with my patients. My appointments are an hour long.
Yeah.
Intakes are 2 hours because I think that spending the time together and really listening and understanding each other, I think it makes a huge difference. So I can do telemedicine. I prefer to do it in person wherever I possibly can, but there's definitely people.
I love that perspective. That's great.
I do
awesome.
Too. I do.
Okay.
Too.
So we'll put a link to Senia's clinic's website. Again, it's Healing Insight. It's right on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. You can mention Best to the Nest when you book and she'll hook you up with that free stool test and the sexy poo talk.
Oh Lord.
And we've got all that in the show notes. Senia, you know, just I love you so much. And you have been so important to me and my family. We joke that we need to have, you know how people have those signs on their dishwasher that say it's clean or dirty? We need to have that in Senia's office if there's a Reese in the clinic. Because half the time I'm in the clinic, I get a text later that like my sister will be like, you were done at 12:30. I was in there at 11:30. I was laying in there when you were in there.
Oh,
so,
great.
You know, maybe
and
we'll
Jenny
do
is
that.
Jenny's very quick to say, I was the one who found Senia. I knew her before Elizabeth did. Like, yes, that is very true, Jenny.
That sounds like
Jenny
sisters, doesn't it? Love that. If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best to the Nest. You can also go to besttothenest.com. And brand new, we have a YouTube channel. Video of our podcast is coming soon. It's going to be very exciting, so hang tight for that. We are the podcast that brings you home.